hello, and welcome to the Stronic 5 podcast for February 21st, 2020. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in the Brooklyn bunker once again, and joined, as always, by my co-pilot on this journey. He's the people's champion. He's Jonathan Kinchin from the planet Texas. What's up, my man?
We got a lot of fun stuff happening with the Stronic Group. We've got the Pick 5 carryover that you might be – you'll probably catch this comment before that starts today on Thursday. There's a Pick 5 carryover in the late at Gulfstream. And then tomorrow you get the – tomorrow slash Friday, you get the best bet in racing with the Stronic 5.
You will be participating in this carryover today?
Look, it's a thing that you know, we have to tell all these horse players. We've talked about it before. We have a voice and we have a voting dollar. And when we get positive expectations and situations that are more favorable to the player, we have to take advantage of those, because the powers that be look at the data. And when you have a reduced takeout or a de facto reduced takeout situation and we don't participate in it, that makes them say, oh, we're not price sensitive. So I always try to do a little something regardless of what I have going on in life to support some of these wagers that I think are horse player friendly.
I think that's smart. And it doesn't mean you have to play it, but you should always look and see. I mean, just because something's a positive expectation doesn't mean it's right for every player to play. JK's in that position. I'm in that position where you might make a token wager. Probably not smart for every player to do that, but at least look. If your opinion warrants it, get involved. We'll talk more about those concepts as things go along. We're going to hopefully at some point get a carryover for one of these Stronic Fives. I thought for a second, JK, that we might have a chance at one last week when things started to go haywire. I did want to do a little bit of deconstruction on last week's wager, but I didn't want to get too into the weeds. I just wanted to ask you what your general approach is. We both had a pretty strong single in, I think it was the fourth leg of the bet last week. And then that horse ended up being a late scratch in real life. Obviously, we're obligated to play these tickets, so doing this show. But in real life, what happens to you if you have a scratch in a leg that your structure was more or less predicated upon?
Yeah, you know, that was tough, right? Because, you know, every time you play a wager, there's usually a lesson you can take away from it. And the lesson that I got there was that you're right. We had the single A of the Richie Baltus stretch out that scratched. And then we had two Bs. One of the Bs scratched. I believe the Peter Miller runner that was the 7 scratched. Yes. And we were left with the 1. And so in real life, I made the 1 a single A. And I think I used maybe like some, maybe like the 9 or something as a single B. So I just kind of moved everything forward. And I think the mistake that was made there is that you have to kind of reevaluate the situation. I don't think I would have ever landed on the winner of the 6, but there's a possibility in which I could have. And so you got to kind of take another glance at it when the scratches come in. So, because it can change the entire outlook of the race.
I was going to say something very similar, and this is an idea I'm stealing directly from Mike Maloney's book, Betting with an Edge. He talks about how he fiercely guards the time from when scratches come out to when it's time to make the bets in the multis. And that's to deal with this real-time information that a lot of people, including us, either don't deal with or just deal with by rote. You know, just sort of by rote meaning just sort of automatically, like what you suggested. Just, okay, so this B that we didn't really like, all of a sudden, 80% of the play is going through. That doesn't exactly make a ton of sense. It would be much better to have guarded time and be able to completely redo the race. There are tools that make this easier. I'm thinking of Timeform US and the Pace Projector, because, of course, when you have scratches, it's not just like, okay, now you're looking at the same race without that horse in it. It can turn the whole thing on its head. A pace that was going to be fast can now have a lone front runner. I mentioned Timeform US because you can get a visual representation of it. That's one way to sort of get your head stuck back into the race and go through it again and you may end up changing your horses completely. You may end up saying, you know what? I mean, obviously, we're encouraging people to bet on this show, but there might be instances where the change is so fundamental that you decide, you know what, I'm not going to play it this week. I'll save that money and I'll bet twice as much next week. There's a lot of different decisions you can make that are going to lead to making better tickets if you set aside time after the scratches to go back through this. Now, this was a particularly difficult one because it was a very late change. So you really would have had to be able to be having your attention fully occupied. We do recognize a lot of times with Astronic 5, a lot of our listeners, it would be wonderful to do this more along the lines of put in the bet and don't worry about it as you're going about your life on a Friday afternoon. But for multi-race wagers in general, and if you have the opportunity to do so, I think it's a great thing to be able to follow Mike's advice and at least carve out some time to go back and look at everything when those final changes are in. I'm not saying we would have hit it, but I definitely think we would have played the ticket differently had we been able to do that and not sort of had our hands tied by sending picks in the morning.
No, I agree. It's tough. You have to, you know, there's a time and a place where you can just kind of elevate everything. You just kind of move everything over one, you know, all B's become A's and all that type of stuff. But
in a spread race, I think that's right. Don't you think there's a big difference in a spread race? I feel like that's a lot easier. But when you go from a horse as one of two backups that you're barely using to 80% of the ticket going through, that just doesn't feel efficient and right.
I agree.
All right, JK, let's see if we can have a little bit better luck this time around. We did get some nice messages about you had a nice priced A horse that was your suggestion that did come in and get things off to an exciting start last week. Let's see if we can do something similar. This week's Stronic 5 starts at 3:50 Eastern with leg A. It's race 8 from Laurel. Nickel Claimers going a mile. I thought we might have a loose leader here in Battle Ready, a flow move up first off the claim. I definitely want to use that one. What should we do in here?
Yeah, I mean, Battle Ready is one that you want to use as an A just because of the fact the horse could end up being loose, you know, and has some nice pace figures, you know, is going to kind of hit the stretch out. He successfully went two turns before back in Delaware. He ran okay, and then in Suffolk, he actually got the job done going two turns, so just feels like he could get loose and could run well. So I have no problems using him as an A horse, a horse that I definitely wanted to use. Unequivocal is kind of that outside speed horse that I wanted to use as like a B horse, a horse that tactical, has some figures that fit and could kind of show up in that kind of that garden spot at Laurel where you're just kind of sitting right outside speed. But I almost thought about singling the 5. I think this horse is sitting on a big race. Was, you know, last time I wasn't crazy about the pace of the last race. He was on the lead in a race that wasn't the swiftest of paces, but the first place horse in that race where he ran fifth, the first place horse came back and improved his figure and won a $12,000 claimer. The second place horse improved his figure, ran a 5, won an 8K claimer. And the third place horse ran second in an optional allowance race at Oaklawn Park. So it was obviously a very, very tough open $8,000 race. And if this horse runs any of his back numbers or even runs possibly the performance that he did last time, he's going to be extremely tough in here. So it was I could single, but I think that I'm going to use the 1 and the 5 as A horses just in case the 1 gets loose.
Let's take a look as we go through this ticket, because for me, there's a bunch of spread legs in here and we're going to have to figure out where we can narrow down. But in the first draft of things, we'll put the 1 and the 5, whose name is Caladan, as A's in this first leg, and we'll slug the 7 in as a backup. And with that, we'll move on to leg B, which is slated for 4:03 Eastern. It's race 7 from Gulfstream Park. We've got state bred filly optional claimers going a mile on the turf. I thought it was a spread race, JK. I want ones coming from off the pace. One that I'll single out that I definitely want to use is Lovely Lovey, who I thought could get a nice setup and also be a pretty square price against this group. But I certainly don't want a single. How did you see leg B, the 7th from Gulfstream on Friday?
Yeah, this is one of those races where, like, when you're playing a multi-race bet like this that I see very straightforwardly. There's only like four horses I think that can win, maybe five that can win. They're all drawn inside. One of them will end up getting a good trip and one of them will win. I can't separate them. So I'm, you know, these are like the easy races for me. So like I want the 1, 3, 4, and 5 to be A horses. You know, Trilby switching to Bob Hess's barn has nice figures, nice races. You know, it's nothing groundbreaking, right? They just all kind of make sense to me. Those are the ones I want to use as A, and then the 2 I want to use as B, just because I think the 2 is probably up against it from a, you know, from a current form standpoint, but he's got a couple of back races that if he runs those races, runs those races, she could be tough. And she's drawn inside. She could get that pocket trip where the rest of them are getting unlucky. The 1 gets shut off. The 3 ends up wide. The 4 doesn't run that good. The 2 could be right in there saving all that ground and could pop at a very big price. And so she's one that I'll use as kind of that saver B. If you just use 1 B horse, it's doesn't affect your – I mean, this is obvious, but it doesn't affect your bankroll nearly as much as you start using 2 and 3. I mean, I know that's basic math, but –
it's important to point out a lot of people are new to this concept. We've had a lot of people be, you know, this is stuff we've been talking about, reading about for years. Obviously, we don't claim to be breaking any new ground here. These are ideas Barry Meadow and Steve Crist have written whole books about. But we also don't want to, you know, there's also people out in the audience who are just used to playing tickets the way they see them drawn up on TV usually, which is the old school caveman style. So making those points, JK, is important. And I will say this, normally, I agree with you more than this particular sequence. This sequence has so much spreading going on that we might need to come back and shave a lone B in a race to make this thing affordable. But of course, it's all exponential. The more runners you put in on that backup line, the more these tickets are going to blow out. I do want to make one other wagering point just from my point of view, looking at this sequence before we move on to the third leg. And that is, in many instances, depending on what the rest of my ticket looked like, a horse like Lovely Lovey, I might want to press, in other words, play for an extra combination. But as expensive as I'm guessing this ticket is going to be, this might be an instance where I take a horse like this and just outside of this context, use in either other picks or, if the price is right, maybe even bet to win to get my stake back for this bet or even a little bit more. So there's ways you can press a horse within the context of a bet like the Stronach 5, and then you can, of course, press a horse by using them in different pools, sometimes most efficiently the old pick 1, aka win. I know that's not really the way that you typically play, Jonathan, but it is a possibility I wanted to throw out there to listeners if it's something that appealed to them.
Yeah, no, you can absolutely do that. Like you mentioned, it's not typically what I do, but I don't have a problem with the thought, right? It's like, you know, if I were to take over an NFL team, I wouldn't run the triple option. I think it's too hard to do in the NFL with fast linebackers, but I'm not against the fact that people try it and that it works. It's just not for me.
Right. The wagering personality, the handicapping personality, those are concepts we're going to talk about just about every week here on the Stronach 5 podcast. And with that, we're going to take a look at leg C. We've got race number 3 from Golden Gate, scheduled for 4:44 Eastern, 5.5 furlongs, 8K claimers. My inclination was maybe to press number 1 going away party, who looked to me like the best speed in a race without much of it. But I also like the 3 in here on trip and flow angles. I wish we could single, but my gut is really to try to take those 2 against the field. How do you see this one?
Yeah, look, Golden Gate and Polly are just always kind of tricky for me. I'm such a dirt player that there's a lot of principles in dirt that you have to look, you have to treat a little bit differently when you're on poly. So one of the things I've started doing is I close my eyes, I take a deep breath, and I handicap the race as if it was being run on dirt and all the past races were being run on dirt. Like, so all the races that are poly, I just pretend they're dirt and I pretend the race is dirt. And then I handicap the race and see where I land. And then I close my eyes again, take another deep breath, and then I treat it like it's turf. And I handicap it and see if I end up on a different horse or if I end up on the same horse And when I end up on the same horse in both scenarios, it gives me an idea that there might be a play opportunity. And that's where I landed on the three in both scenarios.
Interesting.
And that was one of the reasons why I wanted to use this horse as like kind of a single A. Kit DeSormo, in my opinion, is still one of the greatest riders of all time. And when he's paying attention, he is one of the best the game has ever seen. And so you never know what you're going to get, but it doesn't ever discourage me when I look down and see his name. So the last three races for, how are we saying this, Alsmear?
Yeah, that works.
Last three races were good. Had some nice, you know, internal pace figures to show some ability. The 5.5 and the 5 doesn't seem to be a problem, kind of always in the mix. Kind of has that nice inside draw. Some speed will maybe to the inside go out in front of them and sit right in there. So, you know, a lot of times in these Golden Gate races, I think people spread. You know, if I can find a horse to single or single A, then and that's kind of why I landed there. I get your argument about going away party. I just get disappointed so often about speed horses at Golden Gate where they look like they're going to be loose and they still get run over late. So
fair.
The 3 was kind of my top choice. I was going to use the 1, 5, 6 as B horses. The 6 is one that I could toss.
I think it's a lot. Using 3 B horses here to me feels like a lot knowing that I want to spread in leg 4 and 5 and we already spread in leg 2. So, I mean, think about the marginal cost of each B horse here is pretty darn significant.
The 6 is going to be bet. The 6 is dropping in class, but the 6 is also cutting back. And I just don't like horses that don't show a ton of speed going 2 turns and then are now cutting back. And I'm just not crazy about that. And so King Eddie on class just could run them all over late. But I think there's a better opportunity to fade there. So that's a decision that you're going to have to make. If you believe that this horse is talented and could jump up. But for me, it's just a little bit concerning. It's a big drop from open 25 all the way down to 8.
Let me tell you, if you take one B horse out here, each B horse costs, the way I have this roughed up, about $160. So it can go from 800 to 640 to take the 6 out here. I say we rough draft it like this. We'll see where we are in these next 2 legs, and we come back and look at it again. And see where we want to cut cost. I don't feel like we want to give out. Already a $640 ticket would be too much, I think, to give out as our final ticket. Now, of course, this is all before scratches and things. But I'll let you make the decision. For our rough draft, should we leave the 6 in as a B here or just go ahead and boot it?
The problem is if we're going to take the 6 out, we got to take the 5 out too.
Okay, that's interesting. And that might not be a problem. I mean, that's going to get us down. That's going to get us down under to a budget that I think is a much more manageable 480. And I mean, I feel pretty good about it. I liked your case on the 3, and like I said, I was having trouble getting away from the 1. You made a good point against the lone speed angles, not maybe not being as potent, but this horse just fits. I mean, on any way you handicap it, to me, the 1 fits. So I'd need as at least a B. What do you think? Should we take out the backups and try to proceed knowing we can now spread like crazy in the next 2 legs, or do you want to leave them in and we can always come back later? I mean, it's just a question of how you want to do it.
Yeah. Let's come back. Let's leave it like it is and work backwards. That way people can kind of hear the decision-making process. They can hear it all the way through. Cause you know, some people might have a different opinion about some of these other races, you know.
They might
feel like they, because if you single the 5 horse in the first leg at Laurel, now you suddenly have a little bit more of an opportunity later to use some more horses.
I like it. All right, let's move on to leg D, race 3 from Santa Anita, 12-5 claimers going 6.5, non-winners of 2, lifetime. As I've said multiple times, looks like an open race to me. And I always hate this, JK, when it's an open race, but if you made me make a top pick, it'd be the favorite, and that's Promnesia. Made that middle move into a hot pace last time. Could get a better setup in here. Definitely want this one, but I also want coverage. What do you think?
Yeah, this is the race where I want to spread and try to catch a price. These lower level claimers. Is a lot of, you know, often where you find some of the confusing results. They're a lot less formful. That's why they're 12-5 claimers. I don't mean that to be disparaging of the animals. They are still out there laying it down and trying hard, but you know, sometimes when you're a 12-5 claimer, you wake up on the wrong side of the bed and you're not really excited to be doing what you're doing on the day. So this is a big spread for me. I think I used 5 in here, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. And you know, I'm trying to think of what some of the thoughts were on some of those. They're going 6.5. So one of the things that I like to look at is you know, to me, 6.5 is like the closer's sprint distance at Santa Anita. Back in the day, I did a bunch of work where surprisingly the 7 furlongs was speed favoring, the 5 was speed favoring, the 6 was kind of fair, but the 6.5 leaned towards horses from off the pace. So when I'm looking at horses going 6.5 at Santa Anita, I always want to see horses that are kind of finishing, that aren't doing a lot of their running early and coasting home because they just can't get that distance. And so the 5 Purdue had some really fast pace numbers, hoping for a little bit better distribution of that energy. Promesia, like you mentioned, made sense to me. And so, and then the 2 outside runners, I thought could get some of those kind of circling wide trips with some kind of even types of runs in their last 2. I thought this race was wide open. The favorite will probably win, but
I hate that. Don't you hate that?
It's, yeah, it's the worst.
I really wish we had Knox on the favorite. If I was going to try to take, you know, just with the thought of finding another place to save money, if I was going to take one of those 5 out, maybe the 7's going to be too far back and has been really big prices in the last few. Can you make a passionate case for inclusion?
I liked his last race at 6.5. Although he was, you know, he's beaten 50, he was kind of like one of those outside in trips and ended up kind of down on the inside where it isn't exactly where you wanted to be. Was 43-1 last time, 33-1 the time before that. I think you're going to get bigger than 10-1 here. Mm-hmm. This is the type of horse that really, really pays. Yeah. But I'm not opposed to the idea of moving the horse back. Was in for open 10, now in for the 12-5. But the price is going to be huge. So, and also in a situation where you're using 5 horses as A's, dropping one back to a B doesn't make the largest difference because you're going from a multiple of 4 to a multiple of 5. It's not nearly as significant as going from 1 to 2. You know,
this may be JK tries math fails a little bit. I mean, it's saving $128 to bust the 7 back to a B. That might be worth it to me.
Right. No, but not, I'm not saying that it's not going to affect it. I'm saying that the when you go from 5 horses to 4, the impact is significantly less than if you go from 2 horses to 1.
Yes, yes, clearly. You're not doubling, but it is, right. Those are dollars we might need. I'm going to leave the 7 as an A for now, but this is another place when we come back and start talking about, you know, we'll agree on what our budget is and then we'll make those final decisions. But right now in the third leg, we have the 5 and the 6 to discuss. And in the fourth leg, we'll have the 7 to discuss A versus B potentially. But for right now, I'm going to leave them all 5 as A's. And again, your budget, listening along, how you want to decide to do it, you can make the decision that works best for you, your opinion, and your budget in tandem. But for now, we're going to talk about leg E to close things out. Race 10 at Gulfstream Park, in theory, 5:33 Eastern. Maiden 25, 3-year-old fillies going a mile on the grass just from the conditions alone, JK, I want to spread. But in the last leg, sometimes, as we've discussed, it's good to be narrow because you can be set up for the possibility to hedge in a smart way. If you made me pick one, once again, I'd go towards the lower end of the odd spectrum just because Kayseri last time made the move that broke the race apart. I know I need to have this one on the ticket, but how are we getting paid in here?
Yeah, I'm going to spread here too. I like the 2 a lot. You know, I wouldn't like single or anything like that, but it's just a horse that I want to, you know, let people know they should probably include. A beautiful day. Didn't do much running on debut, but was finishing and galloped out well. And if you look at the pedigree, the dam, her first time trying turf, she won. So obviously there's a possibility here that there's some turf in the family. So I think I had it 1-2-4-8. Yeah, 1-2-4-8 okay. With a B horse as the 9. Gets Jose Ortiz, first time starter. for a barn that wins at a pretty good percentage, winning 27% for the meat. So that was one that kind of caught my attention. Was, you know, a wide trip. It's hard to win first out. And so, you know, the wide part and all of those things are reasons I can slide the horse back as a B. But the high winning percentage from the trainer and getting Jose Ortiz is probably a recipe that you don't want to get beat by in a horse that I could probably slug in as a B horse here.
I'm convinced. So here's the bad news. The good news is we've got this drawn up. I'll do the same thing. I'll put the screenshot in. We'll write out the tickets. But this is $800, and I don't think we can give that out. What do we have? What are our parameters? What do we want our budget to be for the ticket that we end up putting up on the Stronach in-house simulcast stuff?
Yeah, so production meeting in the middle of the show. I don't really ever want to have parameters.
Okay.
I want us to just talk through it as, you know, I don't really want to spend $800 either. So let's. Yeah.
It's just not a good investment.
We're trying to get it down.
Yeah, it's not a good. To me, it's we like too much chalk for $800 to be a good investment in the sequence. You know what I mean? Like we could be right and just be treading water, and that's not where I want to be from a ticket construction standpoint. So
I think the first thing we do is go to leg C and we toss the six as a B horse, okay. And then we go to leg D and we toss the seven. We make the seven a B horse instead of an A horse.
Okay. Now, you'd originally said if we're moving the six back, we have to move the five back. Are you changing your mind on that?
No, I just want to do it. I want to know where I want to see it. I want to see the math happen.
Gotcha. Well, that gets us down to 544 right away. So we've taken a big, big chunk out of the cost of the ticket just with those two moves. So,
and then dip the five back as well.
And then if we take the five off the ticket and try to get away with two against the field in race three at Golden Gate, that is going to dip us down to a very manageable 416.
Now, do we have a $2 A ticket?
We do not. This is all dollars. If we go back to, if we do a $2 A ticket, that'll put us up to 544, still in a manageable realm. And I know you are a believer. You always want to have that all A ticket for $2, correct? Or if not necessarily for $2, but for more.
We want to have it for more because those are our strong opinions. So if that comes in, I want to have that more than once. I'll try to get it three or four times if I can, depending on the budget, depending on what's going on. So what we'll have to do here, Pete, we're at like 544. We'll find another friend who believes in us, and we'll get 200 from them. You put in two, I'll put in two. Bang, boom, here we go.
I like it. I'm feeling good about it. So, yeah, just to I'm not going to recap because it's going to be in the show notes, and we're going to have the picture on the screen, and folks can go from there. But as of right now, we've got our $2 all A line, and then we've got our A's with one B for $1, the total investment, 544, and you can tell from our conversation, there's lots of ways you might be able to back this up. If you were somebody playing, it's a very hard day to do this. It's a very hard day to play this with a small budget, with short money. But is there, if you were to advise somebody how to get this down further, what would you say?
You should try to find a single somewhere else. You just need one more single, I think. If you could find one more single, it could lower you up. You could also maybe try to find another leg to toss a couple of runners, or if there's one we're using that you just can't see it, you don't feel like you want to waste any money on it. That's one way. I would probably try to single in the first leg with the five, and just, you know, get your misery out of the way early. Either you win, you're feeling really good, or you get snapped and you can run down to Gulfstream or Santa and play the pick four, pick five situations out there, something like that. So, that's what I would do. I would try to probably single in the first leg if the budget was an issue, because that will cut the ticket in half. You get down to the 200s if you singled the five in the first leg, because you're using two A horses.
And there's other things you can do to promote that idea. You could still then play, for example, you single the five in the first leg. You could also then come back and play an exacta 1-7 over the five there to pretend, if you really do like the one and the seven, and you're making decisions about how to allocate your money, that might be a way to include those horses and get the cost of your bet back at the very least if the five runs second to one of the other two that you'd like. That's the kind of thing I'm inclined to do because it's a way you can get insurance for very, very little money. Another way you could possibly do that would be to narrow down on the end. Maybe you just want to play the top two choices. Who are our top two choices in that last leg, JK? Remind me the numbers. I don't have that in my notes.
In the last leg?
Yeah, in leggy. I like Kayseri, and I think you made a really good case for, was it the two?
Yeah, the two was one, and then I like the two was one. The two was one of my top choices, and then I believe the one was the other one that I liked in that spot.
So for example,
I didn't say who my other one was. So let me just say the two.
Okay,
as my top choice back there.
You could go ahead and play. I mean, I'm just using numbers here. These are not touts by any stretch, but you could play the one and the two and then play exact as 4, 8, 9 over one and two. The theory basically being that it's a smart way to hedge. And if your top picks weren't going to at least run second, you just weren't meant to cash there. For me, mentally, it's very easy to, it's hard to come close and be almost right and not cash. But if the horses that I really like just don't run, it makes it much easier to turn the page. Again, that just speaks to my gambling personality. For everyone has to make that decision individually. But I did want to throw out a few ideas there of how you could get this ticket cost way down. You could do both of those exercises and get this thing really cheap and still have an opportunity to participate in this bet and potentially be alive for a really nice score in this week's Stronach 5. And that's about all I have, JK, unless you have anything else for the listeners here to wrap things up.
No, good luck. Good luck on this week's Stronach 5, and let's try to cash one of these bad babies. If you do hit it, tweet at us. Tweet at us that you hit it. Hashtag Stronach 5. Tell us your story. Tell us your decision. What eggs you cracked, and what you did. And if you had a bad beat, we don't usually like to talk about bad beats, but if you need the therapy, send us that as well.
We'll be here for that as well. We'll eventually get this voicemail hotline up and running. It's not quite ready for prime time, but we do appreciate the questions. We'll take the bragging and the from you. We'll take the kudos for us. But also, if you have questions for us to address about betting strategy, folks are always asking us betting strategy questions. This podcast is a terrific place for them. So feel free to hit us up on Twitter at LoomsBoldly here, at UT Big Hair there, or if you go over to inthemoneypodcast.com, you can reach us through the contact page. We look forward to hearing from you. And with that, I'll thank JK. I'll thank our sponsors for this show, the Stronach Group. Most of all, thank all of you, the listeners, for tuning in and already asking good questions and making this show a lot of fun to do. I've been looking forward to it the first 3 weeks we've gotten it out there. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. In the Money Media's business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your Stronach 5 photos.